You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
In the 100-plus episodes that we've done so far of The Dan Nichols Show as a podcast, plus the 219 that we did over 16 seasons of the show on television, I'm not sure my mother has ever been quite so excited about a guest coming up on the show, with one exception, when he was on the show before when we were on television. He is the absolute pin-up and figure of adoration of women of a certain age. And unfortunately, that actually just means women of all ages, because he has a magnetism and a charm that is completely inescapable. Believe me, I've tried. It has not worked. He's a great friend of mine. He's a superstar of South African television. He's back on our screen sporadically, which is a source of great joy. But most importantly, he's someone I get to hang out with this morning and spend some time with. It's a very warm welcome back to the show, Dr. Michael Moll.
Dan, it is a treat, and you always hit the nail on the head. I got to tell you, I mean, I'm gigging under my breath, because most days or most opportunities I get when some young, beautiful girl comes up and says, can I have a selfie? It's followed by these words, because my mom is going to be so excited that I met you. So thank you for just adding to that and reminding me of the generation we come from.
Well, you arrive looking in extraordinary health and you never seem to age. Most people would say that very admiringly. I say that with deep resentment because you master something so many of us can't. But there is still the joy and the big smile and the trademark Michael Moll look. And I wonder if part of that is attributed to the fact that one of the real staples of South African television, an iconic show that so many of us grew up watching and loving and enjoying, has made its return. Top billing is back.
Can you believe it? 27 years on air and then off for, I don't know, 8 or 9. And I wasn't even aware of the reboot. I was invited to a little bit of a top billing celebration. I said to Jackie, my wife, hey, let's go meet some of the old presenters. She says, you are the oldest, so just get that, you know, into your head. And arrived at the event, Dan, it was actually rather funny. It was at a beautiful Tintswalo, and you have to go down a shuttle to get to this venue. And in the shuttle was a group of influencers. Jack and I were sitting in front, influencers behind us. On the way down, I hear these words, what's this top billing thing anyway? Isn't that just a show for old people? I said, have you ever met any of the presenters? No, she says. I said, well, now you have. And then the apologies and sorry, my generation. But it was an interesting experience, because there is a generation of South Africans who have no idea what a toppling house is, or a toppling wedding, or a toppling, you know, story, as it were. So it was lovely to see that play out, and then to hear toppling is going to be rebooted. So, yeah. Talk about a throwback Thursday.
Can you remember the voices? There was a very distinct tone, that sweeping regality this week on Top Billing. And you delved into this world that you dreamt of being part of and saw people you almost felt you could reach out and touch. And I want to jump back into some of those experiences in a moment. But bringing something like that back, there are times when it does work. There are other times when it really doesn't. And maybe it should have stayed in that slightly nostalgia-tinged past. When you heard it was returning, were there mixed thoughts?
Exactly that. We had a wonderful run. It was almost pre-streaming. It was, you know, it was...
Television had just started, really.
It had its heyday. You know, my kids often say to me, Dad, you got out just at the right time. But Dan, even so, the reruns of Top Billing, the kind of nostalgia Kaylitz, were still in the top 10 most viewed shows on SABC. And I think it was that plus TikTok billing. I think I've got that correct.
Hip young influencer, alive. You, yes. Michael.
And so SABC said, listen, there's a demand, there's an ask, there's a need for that. Let's bring it back. It comes back different. Still the same kind of formula, the aspirational stuff, the what could be, the possibilities of the, you know, personalities, the weddings, the houses. But it comes back with a very strong authentic element that social media brings it. So all of a sudden, we were talking about this earlier, it's not just the cameraman and Salman on set with Michael and Bussy doing their links. There's now 47 people on set. All it's social media, it's photographs, it's capture this moment, it's getting ready with us for the show. It's all the behind the scenes. And I think there's a generation that is drawn to that far more than the sleek final, you know, performance and episode. And that's been fun. That getting back on set for the first time in probably a decade and just seeing all of this activity and, you know, stopping what we're doing in front of the big camera to look at the little camera and kind of say, well, this is where we're at and this is what we're doing. And it's a lovely blend of social, of television, of broadcast, and I think it's going to do well. But again, as you say, the jury's out. We remember Top Billing for what it was. Is it going to be the same? I hope so, but better.
I have seen some of that behind-the-stuff scenes, looking at guys like Dr. Fez and John Boynton Lee, who both seem to be largely allergic to shirts, which does remind me of an early Michael Moll, where you were frequently seen in soft focus striding across a beach wearing little more than a smile.
So that has changed. You're not going to see any of that this time, right?
When you do delve back, I know there's so much joy from that period. It was certainly not what made you as a person, because Michael Moll, in his own right, is very much an individual, but it did make you in the eyes of South Africa, and you became this beloved television figure that everybody adored, and most people hoped to one day wake up on a desert island with. And it was a space that gave you this wonderful opportunity to adventure and to experience and to do something that I know you really value and enjoy, and that's simply meeting people and sharing their stories, which is something I've always loved about you. You're genuinely interested in other people. Go back to those early days to finding out that Top Billing was happening, that you might have a shot at being part of it, and how that then fed into this Dr. Michael Moll story.
Dan, I think you, again, hit the nail on the head. It was probably the best job in the world. And people would often stop me and say, you've got the best job in the world. You know, and it was hard to argue that, because there was travel, there were amazing individuals, there were celebrities that I watched and kind of just had this amazing privilege to meet. I mean, not all of them. I grew up listening to Bon Jovi. There was a strong bromance. And when he came to the country, Bussy just took that interview, which I still hold against her.
As you should.
Come on, Bussy. I know the guy's story. And she said, I'm meeting the man. You know, you sort of take your place wherever. But, there was an interview with Elton John that I'll never forget. When you interview someone of that stature, my experience was, over the years, your opening question is key. You've got to grab them. You know, if you just let it slide, if it becomes the usual sort of, so what are you working on? And tell me about the new project. It becomes vanilla and bland and beige, and you lose your subject. And so the first, I had a list of questions that I was asked to ask. But when he sat down in a flurry of Elton John, the first question that came to mind was, Sir Elton, as a gay man, singing or celebrating sexual promiscuity at the height of the AIDS pandemic, what were you thinking? And I said, out of the corner of my eye, my producer
goes, what?
Just gone, what? and we've flown all the way to Vienna. It's for this one single interview. It was an AIDS benefit concert we were covering, and a long pause, maybe longer than I'd anticipated.
Have I ended my career?
But then he leaned into the mic, Dan, and he went, that's one of the most significant questions I've ever been asked. And let me tell you exactly what I've been trying to undo for the last 3 decades. And it was an interview that just went stellar. I mean, it was so deep. It was so intimate. It was just such a side of Elton John I'd never heard. I don't think anyone else had. And it was beautiful. And got an invitees, you know, party afterwards and all that, you know, and a big hug and a kiss from Elton John. Not that that was the goal, but it was one of those moments where, as you rightly pointed out, you get to meet the most amazing people, but you get to get their story and draw their story out to them, which you're so good at doing. And again, you would appreciate what I appreciate in doing that. So I don't think I answered your question even remotely to what you were asking there, but that's the first thing that came to mind when you talked about some of the things that, I reminisce and miss and essentially looking forward to in the new Top Billing 2.0, 3.0, whatever you want to call it.
Again, it wasn't all completely perfect there, because I know that for a couple of months thereafter, subconsciously, slip of the tongue, but Elton would frequently call David Furnish Michael. But thankfully, they got over that, and I think they're all okay now, although Top Billing is banned in the John household as a result. You also got to do so much of the travel and that glamour element of Top Billing. This week, Michael is in the Maldives, and this week, Michael's in Barbados, and this week Michael's in Fishhook, and all of these dream destinations around the world. Getting to see the world as part of the work that you did, yes, you're still working a lot harder than people often realize, because they just see the cool, polished, finished product. But that was also an element, again, knowing you as well as I do, it's so much fun to be able to call a job.
Oh, Dan, I loved that. I mean, the travel was why I stayed at the Top Billing, I think, as long as I did, and put my hand up for the off the beaten track trip. So didn't do New York, didn't do London. That was Bussy, loved that. That was her. Borneo and, you know, Croatia and the lesser known destinations I loved. But as you described that, it also took me back to a kind of a poignant moment in Jackie and my marriage. So we've been married 32 years this year, first wife, only wife. But there was a season where we had a newborn son, had colic, was a difficult child. My wife's at home batting with that. And Michael is in Barbados and Mauritius and Maldives and just like loving life, best job in the world. And it became a real issue. And again, she married a medical doctor. She often said to me, I don't know if I can live with this because I married a doctor, not a TV presenter. And I'll never forget, I was on the set of Tatooine, Star Wars, shot in the middle of the Tunisian desert. Back in the day, I was in Luke Skywalker's house. I mean, it was just living a dream. And got back to a message that Jackie just left saying, I'm done. This is not working for us. You know, let's call it quits. So I'm in the middle of the desert. I've got another 5-6 days of the shoot left. And my marriage has just literally imploded. Not what Jackie done, what I'd done essentially. And you can see living two separate lives. I hired a guy to drive me out of that desert. I think I flew through KLM, but I don't know how I got home, but within 24 hours, armed with a little Berber carpet, my last remaining cure that I was ever going to get because my days of trouble were over, I landed back at home and went, hey, I'm back. Let's sort this out. How can I help? And again, that was a couple of years ago. We've been married for over 3 decades. But that was a side that people don't get to see. That was kind of the balance of this amazing travel experience, but at the same time, family matters. And that really is where our priority was. And to Top Billing's credit, they honored that. And they went, that's fine. You tell us when you can, when you can't. We're not going to push you to be in every corner of the globe at all given times.
And that's a difficult call to make because obviously family is the most important thing. But you're also doing something, and I know this, I can identify with a lot of this, maybe not to quite such extremes, but you're having so much fun with so many cool people, but you're also doing something that really validates who you are. And it's this daily, the dream is coming true. And you sometimes have to think, well, yeah, okay, it is. But what's fueling it is being drawn from somebody else who's not living the dream.
Right.
And it's quite easy to ignore that until it's too late. So good for you for making that abrupt U-turn.
And the other thing Top Billing did, which is great, is they, as our kids got older, they said to Jackie, hey, why don't you produce as well? So Jax and I got to see vast swaths of the world together. Her as a producer and director, and I was on the other side of the camera. And I know our crew used to love that because other directors had a little more respect for the presenter and the talent on set. You know, I would do a link to camera and they're like, thank you, that's fine. You know, with Jackie directing, I'd do a link to camera and she'd go, that was pathetic. Like, where did you get that? And come on, give me a little more. That makes no sense at all. And I mean, I just got this camera giggling and, you know, just loving how this, this marital conflict happens on camera. But And as a result, yeah, we got to see a lot of the world and travel together, which is a real, real treat.
I've actually been through the archives and you can see very clearly when Jackie comes on board because up until that point, you're interviewing Cameron Diaz, you're doing the Sports Illustrated swimsuit suit. After that, it's interviews with Dame Judi Dench and Helen Mirren and you're covering the Breach Championships.
You know, and yeah, exactly.
Even those that you would have loved and it was an enormously rewarding space, but it wasn't the only rewarding space. I remember first meeting you and I was under the impression that your parents were massive Kaiser Chiefs fans and that Doctor was actually your first name and Mr. Kumalo was a hero in the Mole household. Then discovered, no, not only is he ridiculously good looking, effortless on camera, terribly charming, but he is a qualified medical doctor. And you're certainly not the only person in the broad entertainment industry to have that. Look at people like Riyad Musa is one of our comedians. I think half of our last Miss South Africa contingent have all allegedly been doctors. But it is something that you...
Doctor fans.
Exactly. But you do genuinely have that. How much in the early career was Michael a doctor? Did entertainment charge straight in? Or were you coming back from the jungles of Borneo and spending 3 days diagnosing strep throats and runny noses?
It was more than that, Dan. It was actually trying to combine both medicine and media. And in those early days, I was doing trauma. So an ER physician, which meant 12-hour shifts, which meant I would have to double up on shifts
to make space for travel. So if I'm going to be away for 4 days and I was employed, no problem, but you've got to make up your shifts, which meant I would come home literally, and it happened often, back from the airport, a shower, into the unit, and working for the next 12, 24, you know, dear God, sometimes even 36 hours, which is not great for patients. But it wasn't strep throats. It was emergency medicine. And I loved the two because it was two vastly different worlds. You know, you'd go from, and with all respect to designers and to architects and interior designers, I would go from a shift at the unit where life and death happens, where someone is, where you're breaking news to family, you know, we've done all we can, but your son didn't make it, to, you know, a set of, you know, beautiful home and a designer who's just throwing a hissy fit because the scatter cushions are ochre, not eggshell white, you know, whatever the, and it was.
And, just, and that's clearly far more important.
Well, there you go, you know, and I think, and again, it was a wonderful privilege to live in both worlds, because I do think there's a risk and a tendency that we get to see one world as what really matters, and we miss out on that kind of real life. I'm getting too deep and philosophical. I don't mean that at all.
Right, we'll edit all of that out.
Yeah. This is like, oh, come on, Michael, what a buzzkill. The point was, it was wonderful to do both, and I think to have both experiences, and very much real medicine. So not the Dr. Kamala, and not what a lot of patients felt when they came and saw me. They recognized me, and I was doing some locums at one stage, and I more than once had a patient walk in and kind of sit down and go, you're not a real doctor. You know, and literally leave. And I wanted to kind of take up my certificate and say, no, it's true. You know, tell me what. But they were just too much, man.
And I've seen the online university that certificate came from, and it's a great space in Eastern Europe. It's a crazy swing that, you know, Tuesday you're discussing skincare conditions with and routines with Brad Pitt, and Wednesday you're doing open heart surgery by the side of the road at a traffic accident. And it's this wild sway. But I think bringing them together and this composite life that you've led is something that makes the experience so rich. And it's something that has continued through to now, because as you step back into the top billing realm, you've also been doing a lot of work, and I've been watching a lot of the stuff my good friend Faf du Plessis, who shares your absolute refusal to get any older, has been jumping into as well, and all sorts of things I don't really understand, biohacking and fending off age, and as somebody in his late 60s myself, I watch this quite closely. It's clearly more than just a little bit of fun. It's clearly something very passionate about, believe in a lot. So for somebody who's an absolute ignorant when it comes to this space, what is all of this, and why is it important to Michael Moore?
Dan, I tell you what's crucial for me is, for years I was trained as a medicine 2.0 doctor, which essentially was a doctor that said, live your life, and when you get sick, we'll step in and help. And we really try to extend lifespan. So the average lifespan today is 73. What would happen is you'd get, you know, deathly sick, and we would throw everything we had at you and try and extend life for 3, 4, 5 years, however long it took, uncomfortably, at great pain, great expense. Medicine 3.0 goes, no, health span matters more than lifespan. Health span is the number of years we live free of disease and disability. On average, it's around 63 at the moment, which means, in layman's terms, we live for 63 years, relatively healthy, and then we die slowly for 10 years.
That's a deeply depressing summary.
It is. It's a horrible buzzkill. But those 10 years we have agency over, and what we do today, you and I, affects that, and we can narrow that gap. And not only narrow that gap, but extend our lives, extend lifespan by another 10 good years as opposed to 10 difficult years. And so for me, the drive is we get to do that. We get to have agency over that. My skin crawls when I share this with people, and they go, but you know, if you want me to eat salads and train at 5 in the morning, you know, and just, you know, live and meditate like a monk, but I've got bad genes, it doesn't matter. It does. You know, if you look at the genetic, epigenetic ratio, and I'll explain that in a moment, 93% of our health and well-being is lifestyle, 7% is genetics. So whether you have good or bad genetics, that's not your destiny. It's how you choose to live. We call it epigenetics, but essentially it's your choices. And so, Dan, why it's important to me is essentially 93% of our health is in our own hands. We have agency over that. And what we do today matters tomorrow, matters in 10 years' time, and it matters as far as our health span is concerned. And if I can get that message across to people, just to say it's not expensive. You don't need to be injecting peptides. You don't need to be, you know, chasing the latest supplement. It's how we eat. It's how we sleep. It's how often we move. And that's how we connect and hold hands with those closest to us that really matters. That's 90% of it. The other 10%, minor gains.
As Kumbaya plays gently in the background, I go back to the earlier suggestion that we're going to have to be up at 5 a.m. And eating salads. My life is very much built around balance. So getting that balance between Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and getting that balance between seared scallops and crayfish. There has to be some sort of balance for the majority of people. Yes, you train 8 times a week at 4 a.m. and are this sculpted Adonis as a result. For the majority of people, both time and generally commitment is not going to allow that. So is there a middle-ish ground where I can not die slowly for the last 10 years once I hit my early 60s, but also not have to suddenly become a men's health cover model in training to get somewhere that Michael Moore will give his grudging seal of approval?
Dan, it is easier than you think it really is. So what you're describing is, I think, what a lot of people feel. The change is too big and too much of a leap to get to health. It isn't. I mean, let's start with sleep. So 7 hours. If you can get 7 hours, great. It's not when you go to bed, it's what time you get up in the morning.
So the theory that if you go to bed after midnight somehow affects, is that just folklore?
No. If you can get 7 hours and wake up consistently at the same time every morning, that changes everything.
Or just after lunch.
Or just after lunch, given the amount of Chardonnay or Pinot that you've taken in. But for example, that's just creating a set point, consistency. Your body loves consistency. Pick a time, 6 o'clock, you know, and as soon as you get up at six, get some sunlight in your eyes or get some sort of, that sets your internal clock. It sets circadian rhythm. It means that you're going to fall asleep better the following day. You've changed nothing. You've just regulated your sleep. With that comes a reduction in heart disease and diabetes. Your hunger hormones just kind of come into balance again. If you're not sleeping, by the way, your hormones go all over the place. You're eating more calories than you should. You're craving highly processed foods. You're fixed with sleep. Damn, for you and I at this age, testosterone. And if you're sleeping 5 hours or less, your testosterone, I mean, your testicles basically are smaller than someone who's sleeping 7 hours or more. True story.
Well, they're actually kept at home in Johannesburg by my wife, so I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Fair enough. But the point is, you know, we don't need testosterone replacement therapy. You just need sleep. And sleep is easy to do. You know, it's amazing how I think we live in a generation currently that has almost created this badge of honor for those who say, I get by in 5 hours, you know, and I just hustle all the time, and it's
a 4 a.m. club.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, we can do that, and we're tough. And like, guys, you are honoring something that's killing you slowly, killing you quickly, actually. This I'll sleep when I'm dead turns out is not a pithy, you know, saying. It's a timeline.
It's really a promise.
So again, and that's just one illustration. It's just how you sleep, you know. Dad, how you eat, moving. Every time you have a meal, get up and walk around for 10 minutes. As simple as that. Just flattens your glucose spike. I mean, and I don't want this to become one of these hacks and little tips and, you know.
It already has.
But the point is, it's not a massive change. It's a nudge in the right direction. It's getting those atomic habits in place, and it really is easy to do. And I encourage you to do that.
Well, you said that. I get up from meals, and as per your encouragement, I touch my knees and I do my best to shake off the 7 causes my Greek mother-in-law has decided I need, because, and this is not making this up, she used to phone me after the show went out when we were still on television, and phone me a Friday morning, oh, Dan, this show is so good, this Michael Moore is so cute, and why are you not eating? And adamant that I'm completely anorexic and very problematic, and all the other Greeks feel the same way. But I'm going to take up your challenge, but I generally respond to quite well to having a goal and then doing it quite publicly. So we don't have to sort out the exact detail now, but now if we can sort out some sort of challenge where you are taking basically one of the greater tasks as a medical life hack endorser that you will come across. And let's try and take the Michael Moll formula, imprint it on someone who spends his life on aeroplanes, on stages, drinking very good wine, usually at other people's expense, and having a really good life, and trying to get myself, I think the technical medical term is, more Michael Moll-like. So as I said, won't do it right now, but I'm genuinely keen to do this because I'm 47. I hit 48 this year. And I don't look at, well, I do look many days over 48. But I'm genuinely interested to see, all right, can I apply this Michael Moll mumbo jumbo and turn it into something that has a really positive impact? Because I'm genuinely keen to do that.
Dan, I would take that gladly. You know, the offer's there and let's do this thing. Right. But it's not more Michael Moll. It's the best of Dan that you're going to become and be for your kids, because that's part of the big issue is, what's the why? You know, if I just want to get healthy, if I just want to look like Michael, if I just want to, man, that's, you got to fall flat in that. But if you have that deep kind of why, I want, you know, I want to be there for my kids. I want to be able to adventure and travel and entertain and ride with them and play with them. You know, I mean, that's, get a why like that and it just changes everything. So,
well, I think the why is probably, in African custom, I can take a second wife, and I think sort of 25-year-old Scandinavian Pilates instructor, but I do need to catch her eye. So there we go. We've got the why sorted out. Unless, of course, Mrs. Nicol is listening to this, in which case, only joking, darling.
It's up to you and me.
I really like it, not just because I genuinely do believe that it would be something that works, simply because I know you well enough that you're not the fad kind of guy. You're not going to do something that's going to get you a few hits on TikTok and Instagram, but you do genuinely believe in it. But also, I think you get genuine reward from it. And I listen to the conversations that you've had with Fuff. He's a bit of a health nut and treats his body like the temple that it is. Yeah. And that when you see this kind of space, goes back to the Dr. Michael Moll who's working in trauma, that you are able to do something that is arguably ever so slightly more life-changing than the new Christian Dior collection being launched in Milan.
Absolutely. No, for someone to come up to me and say, you said something about X, and I applied that, and man, I've lost 12 kilograms, or man, I've got more energy than I've ever, that, Dan, more than any other, you know, can I have a selfie? Could I have an autograph? People don't ask for autographs anymore. Can you imagine that? That really floats my boat. And that's the absolute privilege of what we get to do, you and I, having a mic, having a platform, and being able to take science and make it human. And I think that for me is probably, if you were to ask what's your driving force at the moment, Michael, it's taking science and making it human. You know, human flourishing, but according to science. Beating that topic up a little bit. Let's go light again, Mr. Nicol. I can see him kind of going, wow, you know, get a series of me.
Well, keep an eye out on both of our social media channels, because we are going to do something here and I'm excited to see what it will be. I will hate most of it, but I will look forward to the results as my rippling six pack bursts free onto the world of social media. And I will be showing it in tight fitting swimwear somewhere in the world. Wow. at your direction, because before I let you head off to your third gym visit of the day, we've mentioned one of the great interview spaces you had with Elton John, and it's a wonderful story. Also, the bittersweet North Africa experience is a great life lesson for so many people, especially those for whom everything is always rushed and time is always of the essence. But the travel part is also the one that I'm addicted to. I love seeing the world. It really is my favorite thing to do. So once I have this new sculpted body, yes, that people are glancing at enviously, and I'm setting off somewhere really cool, as you look back over the Michael Moll adventures that Top Billing gave you, you sent Bassi off to hang out in Monaco and enjoy the lights of New York. Where would you return to? What's the place that's not necessarily the most luxurious, not necessarily the one that the Hollywood elite are heading off to, but the one that gave you the most joy as a destination to discover and feel that, hey, this is somewhere I was always meant to visit?
Dan, I think that would have to be Croatia. And back in the days, and this was a while ago, the Rand was still powerful. It's still
purchasing
power in the, you know, yeah, that long ago. But just the coast limestone, these clear, beautiful waters, this
uncommercialized country. It was all kinds of beautiful, the stories, the Marco Polo history. It's a place I have not yet, but wanted to take my family back to say, guys, there's a destination we should really enjoy. The Plitvice Lakes and Dubrovnik with all its history. Beautiful, beautiful country. As far as an experience is concerned, though, and here's one I think I'm going to give back to you. I know you've had the most unbelievable experiences and you've done most that there is to do, but probably the one that stands out for me, if I had to go back in the annals of top billing, was getting to Russia, which has its own challenges currently, you can imagine, but flying out of Moscow, a military airbase, in a MiG and getting to the edge of space. Now, I mean, that experience still stands out as one of those, my word. I remember the pre-flight medical was in this old, dodgy office with an elderly lady. There were two of them, you know, this old brown wood paneling. She took my blood pressure incorrectly. There's no way she could have done it. And that's all she did. And that she just said, "Is good." So pre-flight done. My pre-flight briefing with some lieutenant also didn't speak much English. Basically had a model of a plane that he said, "We go up, we come down. Is good."
Love the detail.
Yeah, brilliant. I'm like, I'm all in, you know. And then you go and sit in this rocket, essentially, and we go to the edge of the stratosphere, which was phenomenal. Get to a point where you run out of air to thrust off of. The plane literally becomes weightless for just a moment. You can see the dark of the dark of space. You see the curvature of the Earth, and then you nose down and you head back to Earth. It was in this old 1970s-built Russian MiG at 2.5 speed of sound. I'm like, dear God, who gets to have experiences like this? That, for me, was really, really otherworldly, no pun intended, and very special.
I've got complete goosebumps. I'd be terrified to do it myself, but it does sound extraordinary. And it's a perfect way to sum up these ridiculous adventures that you've had. And I'm really glad I was able to delve into some of those for your sake as well, because I think sometimes when we do the kind of things we do, they blend into each other a little, and we sometimes forget to remember just how enormously cool some of those moments have been and how lucky we are to have been part of them.
Yeah, no, you're so right, Dan. And I've journaled most of my life, which has been amazing. Just a daily, you know, there's a Bible reading that comes in, but it's also just, this is what I saw and learned and remembered about today. And if that's something you don't do, man, I know you've got this taped and you've got most of your life on camera and on recording anyway, but just wonderful to look back on that over the years and kind of read through, because when you see the images but you read what you thought, you put those two together, and that's a memory that's cemented for life.
That's a very powerful thing to do, and I look forward to reading the book, because I sincerely hope it does come out.
Green light, not quite Matthew McConaughey, but you know.
Maybe it'll be a memorial book in 170 years when we finally say goodbye to Dr. Michael Moll. We're going to be in touch a lot in the next little while as Operation Make Dan Look Like Michael kicks in, which I'm really excited about. I'm also genuinely excited about the new lease of life, Todd Billing. As I said earlier, not every show should come back. Some happily belong in the past where they had given us joy. But from what I've seen thus far, it looks like a really exciting reinvention. And as long as there's a liberal sprinkling of the Good Doctor, I think the army of Top Billing fans will be really excited and lap up Top Billing 2.0.
Brilliant. Dan, thank you, man. What a treat to connect again, and look forward to doing this again soon. Not the second, or not the 200th episode, but maybe the 130th or 20th.
Well,
whatever.
Don't want to rush it. And Michael, thank you so much. Enjoy the time with Top Billing, and good luck with getting a call from an irate Tom Cruise now that you revealed that he didn't actually do his own stunts for Top Gun. It was Michael Moll and that MiG over Russia. From flying jet planes out of Moscow to hanging out with Elton John to being in the deserts of North Africa, just some of the adventures that one of South Africa's favourite television stars has had over many years. And if you haven't watched Top Billing, if like me, you're largely too young to have seen it properly, well, the new version is back. It's going to be just as much fun, and it does include South Africa's favourite making a regular return. Also, look out for me getting younger, healthier, and even cooler, hard to imagine, as Dr. Michael Moll puts my life back on track. It's been a wonderful morning with a great friend of mine on The Dan Nicholls Show this week, Dr. Michael Moll.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholls Show.